science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, as they say, let's get started here. We are going to finish our interview with Terry Carter and Kent Smith, otherwise known as two esteemed treasure hunters. And I believe that if you take a moment and listen to part one, you will find that there is a lot of information that they give that most people aren't usually aware of. At the end of our interview today, I am going to be adding a segment, and this is going to be on the children of the basin of that area in Vernal, Utah. And what are we going to talk about? Well, we're going to talk about what they've been experiencing there. So I think this show tonight is going to be very intriguing, very enlightening, and of course interesting. So as always, stay tuned and thanks for listening.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Do you think that there's any truth, either of you, to Indian curses?
I don't know about Indian curses, but at one time the Indians were guarding this, and if you got too close, you never left alive, you know. I got to back up. I didn't used to believe in that kind of stuff. So I didn't believe in the paranormal. I didn't believe in ghosts until I met one and talked to one. I talked to a ghost for a half hour, and I didn't know it was a ghost. And I didn't find out for 4 months later that the person I'd talked to had been dead for 10 years. That flipped my whole world upside down. You know, I don't know what to believe anymore.
Was this out in Utah?
No, this was in Nevada.
Oh, this is
in Arizona near the Superstition Mountains.
Interesting. Oh, well, we'll get to that in 2 seconds. Hold your thought, because I'm going to lead it right to that place. I just, I just read yesterday, I don't know, talk about timely. Someone had posted somewhere, out of 200 people that you probably have met or in a group or whatever, at least two of them are an apparition of some sort. But let's hold that just for a second. Kent, do you have any thoughts about Indian curses? And then we're going to get right back to that.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't know that necessarily that I believe it. I had an Indian foster sister when I was younger for a number of years, and went through high school and that. She was Navajo, but I learned quite a bit from her. The Navajos and the Utes are the tribes I'm most familiar with, although I know Paiutes and some other Indian tribes, but I've been taken off-road, which is very rare on Indian reservation, by the Indians. You can't do that by yourself. You'll go to jail, you'll lose your vehicle, all kinds of stuff. But I've been taken off-road. I've been shown treasures. I've been shown mines. I've been shown where the Indians massacred the Spanish and took them up on the hillside. They ambushed a group with about 119 soldiers and all the peons and slaves and that. And when they ambushed them, they were losing the battle. And they dug some foxholes. You can still see all the depressions in the ground where they dug foxholes. And then they could survive. The problem was the Indians aren't stupid like everybody seems to think they are. So they backed up away far enough that they couldn't shoot them with their weapons and that. Held them there for 3 days with no water or food, and then they sent an Indian down and told them to surrender. About half surrendered. They took them up on the hill and skinned them alive where they could see them, see all of it. Obviously, the rest weren't going to give up, and they fought to the death, and they killed them all. took them out and buried them. They took me over and showed me where they, all of them were buried. They cut the hooves off the donkeys so that in the afterlife, the donkeys couldn't walk and they couldn't use them as animals, that kind of thing. And they took all the people, all the armor, everything, and the rough gold and took it up in one spot and buried it all, which they showed me. Then they had, can't even remember how many they told me. I think it was 72 gold bars that are pretty good size. According to the one Terry showed me that he's seen, it was probably close to 100 pounds a piece, and there was like 72 of them, four in a crate, wood crate, and they took me up and showed me where they were at, which they didn't even bury. They just pushed off in the top of a ravine there. But they took me and showed me that particular day, showed me a whole bunch of stuff, including sacred burial grounds and a number of other things. When we were done, they says, don't come back without it. Indian being with you, and they says, most of the place we've shown you, you'll lose your vehicle and you'll go to jail, that kind of thing. Two of the places, if we catch you there, we'll just kill you on the spot. That has been fairly recently when that took place, not too many years ago. But, and of course, these are just stories I've collected, and I've got a lot of them, and so I've got nothing other than it's a story. But several years ago, and I'm talking maybe 50 to 100 years ago or longer, if you were caught up on any reservation looking for Spanish treasure or something, if you didn't have a map with you or something like that that proved what you were doing, and if you could talk your way out of it, I didn't know I was on Indian ground, I was fishing and I didn't realize I crossed the boundary, those kind of things, they would cut one of your fingers off. Next time you get caught, the very first thing they do is look at your hands to see if you've got 10 fingers. If you don't have 10 fingers, then nobody ever hears about you yet. As far as how much of that would happen now, I've been told on two locations, and by the way, they weren't treasure locations, sacred burial grounds and that kind of thing, but and where they stored the history of their tribe, where I was shown that. But I was told if I was in those areas, they'd just kill me on the spot, and I was told that so fairly recently. But so I've handled bars taken off the reservation. I've got a friend who lost a backhoe because they had a really old map and they were digging up a treasure, which they got into. Mm-hmm. That's one of the bars that I saw on that. And the treasure itself was interesting story, but he lost his backhoe over it. And it took me 6 years to get him to talk about it. Every time I'd ask him, he'd turn red in the face. I think he had to go home and get a high blood pressure pill, because backhoes are hundreds of thousands of dollars. He never got it back and that, and it would upset him so bad when I talked to him. But he knew what the risks were. You don't go on Indian ground. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody without some kind of permission and having Indians with you. I would not go on Indian ground looking for treasure, even though the biggest ones in Utah and some of the biggest treasures in the world that I've been told about that are here in Utah on Indian reservation.
Well, considering this gentleman that I talked with at that conference about his grandpa, I don't know when that happened. I suspect it. I mean, judging from the kid's age and you know my age and stuff, it sounds to me like it's still very serious business there. And
that particular death was 4 years ago.
Okay, thank you.
I was gonna say, Ken, I think I know the story you're talking about, and yeah.
I wonder, and I as I sit here today, with the way the world is changing or whatever, how long that attitude, I don't want to call it an attitude, behavior, ritual, dedication to the land or whatever, if that only happened 4 years ago, and this kid had to go pick up his body parts, for God's sakes. I'm just trying to figure out how long it could go for, you know, because that's why people are always wondering, oh, is the land cursed? You know, there's nobody here anymore. Is it still cursed? I don't know. You guys live out there. Are there places where people aren't inhabited per se with a large population that might be dying out or dwindling or going elsewhere where the land could still look or be cursed? What are your thoughts on that?
I guess I never finished telling you when you asked me about what I thought about the Indian curses and that kind of thing. The skinwalkers, which we talked about briefly, most of what I hear is skinwalkers are actually a curse put on the Utes by the Navajos. And talking with my Navajo stepsister, she talked a lot about lycanthropes. And that, for those that don't know what a lycanthrope is, werewolf is a lycanthrope. There's other kinds, but that plays heavily into their religion and everything else today still. When you die, you have to go out a certain direction out of the Hogan. Your body has to be passed out. If you go out the wrong direction, the lycanthropes will be there to collect the body. And they talk about their superpowers, and they can jump over buildings and all these kind of things. But supposedly, the even though skinwalkers harass the Navajos and that supposedly, just like they do the Utes, the Navajos will use lycanthropes, or not lycanthropes, but skinwalkers, shapeshifters, and that will curse tribes and people with those things. Let's see, what were we going to tell you about? More specific than that is, back in the day, a lot of years ago when I was writing articles before social media really existed, but writing articles on skinwalkers and doing research on the ranches and the paths that the skinwalkers travel and those kind of things. At that point, the skinwalkers themselves are... I was able to obtain a list at that time. I probably still got it somewhere in one of my boxes of stuff. But you can become a skinwalker yourself. You have to. I received a list that was a full page of things that you have to do to become a skinwalker. Number one on the list was you have to murder your own mother and father. And there's a whole page of that. And if you accomplish all those things, you can become a skinwalker yourself. And so. Is there curses in that? I'm not really heavy into those kinds of things, talking about curses and whether they exist or not or that. I do believe in a little bit of it. But I would say, as far as if it's possible, I would say that skinwalkers in particular and lycanthropes and that kind of thing, that, I think that is a possibility with when you get into talking about Indians and that kind of thing.
Well, when we talk about treasure, and then Terry, I'm going to jump with you for a second here, especially with the treasure hunting, you know, or whatever hunting, you always hear of people picking things up, bringing them home and going, bring it back. Some people will send the stuff back if they think it's haunted or it's got some kind of an unusual curse on it. And some people will literally bring it right back to where they discovered it. Terry, what are your thoughts on that?
I have heard that a lot of different times. You know, break into an Indian burial tomb and take stuffs out and their life is ruined and they take it back. You know, I have heard that a lot. And people shouldn't be breaking into Indian burial tombs and taking stuffs anyway. You know, that was kind of sacred to them. And, you know, how would you like people to go digging up your grandparents and taking them home and displaying them? You know, I mean, It's kind of dumb, but people do that. But I've heard that. But back to the skinwalkers, you know, I work with a lot of Native Americans, a lot of Navajos, and you know, they are terrified of the skinwalkers, and they will not even talk about them because they feel it brings them on to them. And in fact, just last week, we was talking about the show at work, about the skinwalker show, and some guys started talking about, oh yeah, it's skinwalkers, that, and the Native American that was there working with us, he got up and left the room because they don't even want to be in the same room when you talk about it, because they feel that it'll bring, you know, bring them to them. And so, you know, they, whether it will or not, who am I to say it will or won't, you know? Like I said, I had no clue that there really was paranormal stuff until I talked to that ghost for a half hour. But then you asked me the other question. I just forgot what it was. Oh, taking the things back. Yeah, I've heard of people that had to take things back because it's messed their life up, and they figure it was because they took stuff out of burials.
I was at that VIP breakfast with the boys, Skinwalker Ranch, you know, that people see on the show. And even in there, I can honestly tell you, they didn't really want to, not necessarily just disclose a lot of things. They felt that if they even talked about some of this stuff, even if they would say, oh, I don't want to talk about it, it's gonna something's gonna happen to me. Actually, I saw the nervousness on some of them. It looks to me like they've been around this stuff a little bit too long, because I could tell that it was they've all been affected by it. But that's a very interesting thing. Terry, I want to ask you quick about that that half hour you had. Who is this person? Where were you? Did the person look as real as you and I? And what on earth happened there?
I had no clue he was dead. He looked real to me. Had no clue till 4 months later I found out.
Where were you?
So I was at, I'd gotten invited to go to the Lost Dutchman Treasure Hunters Rendezvous. And so I went out there, and one of the people that was out there was one of the guys that helped start the Lost Dutchman Museum. So he gave me a ticket. So I went on my way home. I went and stopped at the Lost Dutchman Museum and went through it. And then when I was leaving, an older gentleman stopped me and asked me where I was from. Well, at the time, you know, I live in Utah, but at the time I was doing work on a power plant in Wyoming. And so I told him, I says, well, on the weekdays I live in Wyoming, and on the weekends I live in Utah. And he told me, I told him because I was working on a power plant. And he told me, well, he was from Wyoming, and he worked on the power plants out there also, and including, you know, he worked on all of them out there. And so, well, I thought, you know, I got a YouTube channel, so I thought, well, maybe he's got a great story. He's out here treasure hunting, you know, because why else are you leaving Wyoming to come to Arizona? So I says, you know, you're obviously, you know, looking for the Lost Dutchman mine. I want to know what your story is. And he says, well, I came out here because of the climate, but I'm interested in history, and I've been looking for the lost. I says, well, tell me a great story. And I thought, if it's a great story, I'm going to record this.
Yeah.
I wished I'd have recorded this. Anyways, he proceeds to tell me how that he'd heard that there was these charcoal ovens built by the pioneers, and above them was a heart on the mountain, and he thought maybe that might have had something to do with the Lost Dutchman Museum, and he wanted to go out and find these charcoal ovens, and he couldn't find anybody that knew where they was at. Finally, he met a guy who knew where they was, Salvador Delgadillo. Well, it just happened that I just met Salvador Delgadillo at this treasure hunter's rendezvous, you know, and so I knew Salvador, and he's telling me that Salvador agreed to take him out there. So they go out there, way back in there, 10 miles in, they're in his Jeep, and they get out there, see the coke oven, see the heart in the mountain, and then they come back, and he gets a flat tire, and they change the tire, and he gets another flat tire, so he's riding on a rim, and he gets another flat tire, so he's got two flat tires, and they get stranded out there. Mm-hmm. So they have to walk out in the middle of the night, and finally found an older couple up on a bluff. They hear a noise, go up there, there's an older couple in a motorhome, they make them breakfast, they take him back to town. He gets his friend, buy new tires, comes out and retrieves his Jeep, and you know, it was an interesting story. And he went into detail, I mean fine detail, of this story. Mm-hmm. And it was an interesting story, but not one I wanted to record for YouTube, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, 4 months later, I was back out there in Apache Junction, Arizona, and I'd heard that there was these motorcycle guys, they'd been clear out by the Gila River in the middle of nowhere, and one of them was doing donuts, flipping donuts with his motorcycle, and he flipped out this old-looking necklace that looked like it was Egyptian. Well, that's out-of-place archaeology to me, and I wanted to know more about it, so I was traveling out to meet him. But on my way, I stopped in Apache Junction and met with Salvador Delgadillo. Mm-hmm. And asked him, I said, Salvador, you heard of any Egyptian artifacts and things being found out here? And he says, well, there's this one area that this old man, he found a cave with Oriental or Egyptian artifacts in it. I don't know exactly where the cave is, but I know the area. Come on, I'll show you. So we get in my truck, we go out there, and all of a sudden he says, stop. He says, look over there against the mountain. See them charcoal ovens? That's what the pioneers made. And there's a heart above the mountain. Now, this is 4 months later from when I talked to this guy who's telling me when Salvador takes him out there. And then it clicked in my mind. I remember this guy telling me the story about he's coming out here and they get all the flat tires and stuck. I said, Salvador, I met a friend of yours at the museum. He says, you took him out here. Oh, yeah, that's Jim Hatt. Yeah, we came out here and he started telling me the same story that Jim told me. You know, I'd say, yeah, Jim, or this guy told me this, and he says, yeah, and Salvador would say, yeah. So I says, yeah, I met him 4 months ago. And he looks at me funny. And he says, you couldn't have. And I go, what do you mean I couldn't have? He says, he must have been telling you a lie. It wasn't really him, because that was Jim Hatt that happened to me with. And he's been dead for 8 to 10 years. And I thought, you know, this guy went to this story in detail. You know, this he was reliving this story to me. And I thought, no, this was this guy, but Salvador must be wrong. Salvador thinks he's dead, and he's not, because this guy looked alive to me. So I go back to Goldfield Ghost Town. It was owned by Bob Schuster. I was talking to Bob Schuster. I says, Bob, do you know Jim Hatt? And he says, oh yeah, Terry, you would have liked him. He was some kind of an engineer, and he worked on all them power plants in Wyoming like you are. In fact, he was from Wyoming. I says, yeah, Bob, I met him about three, four months ago at the Apache Junction Museum. And he says, you couldn't have, Terry, because he's been dead for 8 to 10 years. And now my mind's starting to really spin and race. So I go to the museum. I'm going to find this guy.
Right.
So I go back to the museum, and I'm looking around. I don't see him. And I go to the front desk, and I says, Jim Hatt here? And they says, nobody by the name of Jim Hatt here. I says, yeah, I met him here, you know, 3 or 4 months ago. He says, well, let me go back and check. He says, because usually we have people that volunteer, and they're just here for a day or two or something, you know, and I don't meet everybody. So let me go check. So he goes and he comes back. He says, oh, yeah, Jim Hatt, he helped start up this museum, but he's been passed away for 8 to 10 years. And I thought, everything I thought, what was real? I don't know. He looked alive to me, Kelly. He looked alive to me. And I'm thinking, how many times has that happened? And you don't know. I would have never known if Salvador hadn't have said, stop, look, man, there's the coke ovens that the pioneers built. I wouldn't have remembered that, and I'd have never, ever known.
So my question to you on that would be, when you were talking to him, did you see him actually walk away from you to a particular area where you were standing? Where you were in that, what did you say, museum, or that location where you were?
We was outside of the museum.
You're outside of it.
Outside the museum. I was getting ready to leave. He stopped me and asked me where I was from.
Do you recall him walking away from you?
I don't remember. I tried to remember what happened, because my mind was blown. I was thinking, because this is 4 months later, I'm trying to think what really happened. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to remember. I'm thinking there was other people around. Mm-hmm. You know, did everybody see him? Or just me, and they see me talking to myself, so because nobody bumped into him, I'm thinking, you know, I'm trying to think, questions are going through my mind, and I don't have an answer, you know, I just blown away.
There was, I work at a very, very, very top five state fair, just for, you know, hobby, every year. And once people started to get to know the fact that I deviled in the paranormal, I've had many, many stories told to me as well. And one of the stories that was told to me was from an EMT one day. And he said, you see that crowd out there? Yeah, because we've got thousands of people on that property. It's so stuffed, you can't even move sometimes. He goes, one day I was sitting there just watching the people go by. There's this old woman. She was in some kind of a ragged kind of, you know, not modern outfit or anything like that. I just watched her and thought, gosh, she's kind of out of the place a little bit. And then all of a sudden I looked down and realized that she had no feet. You know, she was floating with the rest of the people. So there's
really?
A lot, yeah. So my point to you is we don't know always who may or may not be real standing in front of us. I have heard that people are and can look real, just like you and me, standing there, engaging in a conversation, telling them all, but they would have to electrify themselves with a lot of energy in order to be able to do that and maintain that for at least a half hour. That's a lot of enthusiasm right there. I know.
He looked real to me. And I wished, Kelly, I wished I would have recorded that. I wonder what would have what would have showed up, you know? Nothing. But I didn't. It wasn't great enough story for me to record.
No. You know? It would have been even more interesting if you would have videotaped yourselves together, and then you would have found out on the other end you're sitting here talking to yourself because there's nothing showing on the other side of you with this gentleman as you're sitting there talking. I think that would have been just an absolutely spectacular, I wouldn't say capture, because something tells me he would not have showed, but even if he did, that would have been an absolutely spectacular capture. You know, fascinating. Can't,
you know what?
Go ahead, Terry.
Wonder why. Sorry, I wonder why, because he stopped me. I was leaving.
Because
he, and I wonder why. You know, he didn't tell me where any treasure is. He didn't tell me any great secrets of life. He just told me a fantastic story that happened to him.
Are you sensitive? Know? Are you sensitive?
No, I'm not.
That you know
that of? That I know of. I am not.
Because obviously something about you intrigued this apparition enough to actually, and I'm going to add to the story just a tad. My husband was in on a boat at a museum down in Iowa within the last year. He has always been on the fence about the paranormal, but he does believe in it because he lives the life with me. He was on that boat by himself. He turned and he saw a figure of a man, as real as you and I, standing there looking at him. The guy, as soon as he focused on him, though, which is different from your situation because you actually had a whole half hour with this man, as soon as he focused on him, he saw him and he just disappeared right before his eyes. And
really?
My husband was trying to tell me that he just saw a ghost. And I said, ah, bullshit, you know. And so anyway, and next thing you know it, he had to pound it into me that he really, really saw an apparition, and he could make out the pants, he could make out the shoes, he could make out all of it, and he could make out the beard and the whole thing. But he could only hold himself for about 5 seconds. For any apparition to be able to hold themselves for a half hour engaged in talking to you, I do not know what was there that electrified him enough. Maybe, and I'm just thinking about this right now, something just came to me because I am empathic and sensitive. I have to tell you, it could have been your own energy. You're a very energetic human being from what I can tell. And I could see that there is the possibility he fed off. Now, the only question I would have for you is, did you feel tired after it was all said and done? Because you would have felt drained if something was trying to take your energy away from you. But you have such a high energy about you, such a high frequency. Anybody could stand next to you and you would either feel a little bit more drained and tired. You'll have to think about that if you can even recall whether you felt a little more drained and tired. He was feeding himself off, obviously, in my opinion, off of your energy.
Yeah, it's been so long. I don't remember.
I know. And I don't think you ever will, but I have a feeling you're the battery. Because at the state fair, we're a human battery, and it just lights this stuff up like you cannot believe. I've had many occurrences with it where I work. I've had black-eyed children and black-eyed teens come and engage discussions with me and all this stuff. So I could go into all that. Kent, don't want to leave you out, but have you ever had any experience with the paranormal?
I don't know that I have, but I thought I'd throw in a story. I don't think it's nearly as good as Terry's. I love Terry's story. I've heard that one from him before. Excuse me. But I had a good friend once who used to live in Arizona. And he was telling me stories about he and a friend when they were younger, and they used to go out, and he was telling me how they would find Indian graves, and they were basically what they were doing was robbing graves, which I don't condone.
No.
My first scoutmaster I ever had used to dig up Indian mummies with government contract for the museums.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the days when you could have human remains in the museums, that, and he took me out, taught me how to find burials and that. And so I was talking to this guy, and I was telling him, you know, what I'd been taught and how to find graves here in Utah. And he says, well, this friend years ago used to go out in the desert there in Arizona, and he told me how they would find them. And then they were in construction. They'd take a backhoe out and they'd dig alongside the grave, and then they they would leave the bones and everything in, but they'd get a piece of rebar, they'd dig a trench down along the side, and then they'd get in with their rebar and they'd pull the pots out and that. And so his friend in particular had a huge collection of Indian pots in his house. And he says he had a great big house, a totally unfinished basement, and the whole basement was shelving loaded with ancient Indian pots that they'd got. And he says eventually this guy realized that his house was haunted, and he would not go down in his basement. And he wouldn't go down in his basement, I get, far as I know, forever. Maybe he's taken the pots out or given to the government or done something to try to take care of the situation. But he said that his basement was haunted pretty bad from him having all those funerary artifacts and that in his basement and that. And so that was a story I heard here several years ago, but one where somebody that was stealing pots out of graves and that, his house, he never told me how he knew his house was haunted or that, but he finally came to the conclusion that it was haunted bad down in his basement and he would not go down there.
Yeah, and once again, he probably doesn't remember where he got half of them to bring them back to, but you know, this stuff, you hear of it all the time, and well, I wish I could have another hour with the both of you, but I have a feeling that from a listening standpoint, this is probably going to go into two shows, but it'll go into one show on this TV program. And I think as we're concluding today with some very interesting stuff that people don't necessarily talk about all the time, stuff that people don't necessarily see all the time, but both of you, very, very interesting. Tell us a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, if you want to. Terry, is there any way that people can watch or see you? Or, you know, they're very busy gentlemen here, so I'm going to throw this in on their both behalf. Unless they really want to be reached, I would have to say that, you know, enjoy what they can provide to you here and leave it at that. But Terry, what would you like to offer to people here in any what way?
So I have a YouTube channel, Terry Carter. If you look, you know, search for Terry Carter Treasure Hunter on YouTube and look for the pirate looking skull and crossbones. And that's my videos. I got 300 and some odd videos up there and talking about treasure hunting and out of place archaeology, things that just don't fit. And that's the best way to get to know what I've been up to.
Yeah. And he's got thousands of subscribers. So, you know, you better jump into the pie there before they start limiting that. So very interesting though. And, you know, very fascinating because a lot of this does go hand in hand. Kent, anything that you want to add to this at all regarding anything?
Not particularly. I like I say, I used to have lots of people come to me, people I had no idea who they were, hundreds of them, and give me photos and maps and just all kinds of things. I don't typically give a lot of information out on myself. I already, the people that do know or figure out who I am or where I'm at, just today, I've got several phone calls and texts and so forth. I've got lots and lots of stuff to do with treasure and that, as far as locations and maps and stories and those kind of things. I have people pester me all the time to do books. I'm getting ready to do surgery. Whoops, I think we lost you.
No, you're here.
You're still there.
You're here. You're here. You're here. Okay. Back up. I see your hand. Back up.
Yeah, you're doing good, Kent.
You were there. You're fine.
It says I've got low power, so I might lose you here. But anyway, so I don't have anything really necessarily to share with people. The people that want to share with me nowadays, I still get stories and that shared with me, but most people don't want to share stories with me. They want me to tell them where they can go out and fill their truck full of gold bars this afternoon and take it home and that, and I'm not really into that. A lot of things I've been shown is sacred to Indians or different people and different things like that. And so
I think that
I tell a lot of stories, but a lot of stories and different things because of their sacredness or because of what they are, I won't even tell a lot of stories to people and that I have, but including my own personal doctor, people are telling me, all right, you're going to be out 15 months with this surgery. They're telling me on recovery, and they said, get your computer out and start on your books. I've already started on some, so I may do some books. I have to decide if I want to put it out Amazon and mainstream, or if I'll just do limited copies, 20 copies to give to friends. I don't want all my information lost when I die.
And I think we just lost him. Terry, you still there?
I think we lost him. Well, I'm still here.
Okay. Well, we will talk on behalf of Kent. And so what he's trying to say is that he's a busy guy. He's got a lot of commitment going on right now, and he's got a surgery coming up. And so he's going to be out for a while. So in other words, enjoy this interview for what it is. Enjoy Terry's YouTube channel. He's got a lot out there to present to you. And just understand what we're trying to say today regarding what it's really like to be a treasure hunter. All right, Terry, and on behalf of Kent, thank you so much for being with us today, and hope to have you back sometime in the late future. So take care.
Let's take a short break.
Are you haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to The Professionals on What Are You Afraid of? Horror Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on ParaX Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on ParaX?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction.
We are ready to scare you.
ParaX.
I hope you found part one and part two of the Terry Carter and Kent Smith interview to be very enlightening and also eye-opening. When I met these gentlemen out in Utah, I would not have had this great opportunity to learn just a little bit more about what it's like to be a treasure hunter, or to recognize and come to understand that that area has a lot of treasure. But most importantly, there's a lot of risks that are involved when you do this type of work. And of course, permissions, and of course, a lot of times some deception behind those permissions. And so you have to tread very carefully in being sometimes overly enthusiastic about your hobbies, such as ghost hunting, treasure hunting, or anything of the like that can bring forth some issues. And that's what I learned from them, and also from just the wealth of information that they bring to the table. If you ever get an opportunity to go out to Vernal, Utah, please do so, and just know that that area is quite mysterious. It is a hotbed of all kinds of things, stuff they've either known about for years and have never disclosed, or things that people just live with and they understand to only a certain level. Due to the Secret of Skinwalker Ranch show that is currently playing on television, it is bringing forth at least some of the awareness of not just that property and that land, but also the surrounding area, which could be a radius as far as or more of 100 miles in a radius around that area. My husband and I went to Dinosaur National Park to spend a day there. And if you especially see it in September, probably early September, you will find that it is absolutely spectacular. And of course, there's two sides to Dinosaur National Park. The side that I'm talking about, that's probably more spectacular, is the, if you were to look at a map, it would be the left side of the map of the diagram of that park. It has on there a place you can go to actually see dinosaur bones. And it's an inside structure that's air conditioned, especially during the hot days out there. So you don't have to go outside and, you know, swelter looking at various dinosaur bones. They're well preserved inside. They're interesting. And I think that it's a wonderful exhibit and it's free. You just have to get on a shuttle there at the visitor center and they'll take you right to it. And it's probably, oh, I would say about, you could spend easily 30 minutes there. You know, you could spend more if you wanted to. And the shuttle comes every 15 minutes and then off you go to view the beauty of this wonderful, wonderful park. My husband and I also went out on a road they have on this map in the park to see some petroglyphs. And one of the things that we were very fortunate in having was a pretty good vehicle. It was just one of the more expensive models of a what is called like a Jeep Cherokee. But the that's important when you go out on a side road where there is really very few people out in that area. And one of the things I did learn along the way was that it would be a smart idea to rent a Garmin or something like that, something that would actually work and connect with the satellite, because if you got stuck out there, and there's very few people that go on that road, you could really be in for it, especially if you don't have any water or snacks or anything of that sort. So we had no issue, thank God, but we learned along the way. And my husband went up into these, I don't want to say this cliff area, but there was like a ridge. And you'd have to walk a path to go up closer to this ridge where they had petroglyphs. And these petroglyphs have been essentially untouched for hundreds of years. And Kent did a really good job of explaining in our interview a little bit more about how you can tell if something's been recently scratched out. Or these lichens that have a tendency to grow, and they have different colors, or the coloration of these petroglyphs changed based on these lichens. And so they can get anywhere from a light tan to nearly black. And very interesting. I never really realized that. I had always wondered about how can one tell how old some of these things are. And apparently they're able to determine that. So that was fascinating. My husband did capture, photograph, a number of interesting petroglyphs. And again, it's something you don't do by yourself. And you just need to wear good tennis shoes or good hiking boots and just be really careful when you're going on some of these trails, because it's not just the idea that there's some slippery rocks that you might step on. You know, we're also talking out in a land where there could potentially be rattlesnakes and stuff like that. So you have to be alert to your conditions. But when we were there, absolutely fabulous, beautiful weather. Wouldn't miss it again for the world. Was well worth our time. Okay, so let's shift gears here for a second. And let me talk to you a little bit about the Vernal Conference that I was at and some of the interesting things that I picked up there. So, Phenomicon 2022 was the conference that I went to. It was a four-day conference. They had a good handful of celebrities from Expedition Bigfoot, Giants, Skinwalker Ranch, and some other paranormal caught on tape. Some psychics that were really exceptional, and just a kind of a little bit of a variety there, but very well known, very well put together conference, very professional. You'll find that if you go to paranormal conferences, they all have their own personality. And what I mean by that is probably the very first paranormal conference I went to this year for the first time. And that was on my bucket list for a long time, was to be able to go to some of these conferences. I found that that one had not a lot of interest in hearing the speakers, which really shocked me. They had a lot of vendors there, which drew people in, but they really didn't care about listening to a lot of these speakers. Even if there were some that were celebrities, they didn't draw in the crowd that other conferences that I went to did. So that was a little eye-opening. This conference here had probably close to around the 600 attendance range. And in such a small town of Vernal, if you can imagine just a little tiny small town, the conference center there, I would say, is the biggest draw, in my opinion, other than the beauty of the parks surrounding it, above and to the Colorado side. Just absolutely a good place to have a conference. So some of the things that, out in Vernal, what they're known for, I went to a sky watching event. And when the moon is very bright out, you really can't see very many stars out there. But what I learned along the way there was that while we're doing this star watching event, you could hear the coyotes in the background calling to each other. You could sense a difference in the air. Very clean, a very clean smelling environment. Loved that. But for the most part, once again, if you're not native to the area, you should learn about that so you don't find yourself in a predicament. Okay. Some of the lakes they proclaim to be haunted. And I do not know offhand if the one we went to when we were star watching and gazing had anything to do with the lake that we were at. But it wouldn't surprise me because that area is very, very, what do I want to say? Has a rich history in the Indian populations, especially the ones that were disgruntled with each other, the Ute, for example, and the Navajo, and there are other tribes as well in the area. And so there's been a lot of unrest on that land, and it seems to continue in various ways as time still marches on. At the conference, I was fortunate to be invited to be a VIP exclusive media person to sit in and interview the 5-person cast of Skinwalker Ranch. And I could tell you an entire story about that experience. For those of you who might be interested, it has been that interview, that breakfast interview, was posted on YouTube. And all you have to do is go in and look up something to the sort of VIP breakfast Skinwalker Ranch. And that hopefully will come up for you to watch. You will hear me in the background ask my question, and they spent an awful lot of time on my question. Which was about trickster events and hitchhiker effect And I also wanted to know if any of them had experienced missing time. And you will find that when people are under contract for a TV show, that they don't always have the liberty of being able to tell you what they really would love to share. They can tell you little bits, especially if it's been aired on TV. But again, the ones that technically own the rights to that show are the production people. And so oftentimes your stars or your personalities who are on these shows are sworn to secrecy and aren't in a position to debate anything that may or may not have actually occurred from the creation of that show. So just know that some of that was discussed in that breakfast meeting. And again, if you're so inclined, go to YouTube and punch in VIP breakfast, Skinwalker Ranch, and hopefully that will come up for you. When I was also there, though, I had I wasn't planning this. It just kind of fell into my lap. I had the opportunity, I guess. People were sharing things with me, and then I realized that the reason why they were sharing things with me was I had my Phenomicon sticker on my shirt. And at first I thought, gosh, these people here, they just go ahead and freely rake up a conversation about this stuff. No, it's because I had the sticker on my shirt. But I'm going to start with the first situation, which was meeting this woman at a local store. I needed to go in and get batteries, and so we made a quick run in to a store to get them. And apparently she saw the sticker on my shirt. Okay, and so she was just talking to me a little bit. It was a full moon evening. And she had said that she was already having some unusual occurrences, and that there's two doors that open to go into this store. The first door did not open, she said, one night, and this was recent. This was within a day or two. I suspect the full moon brings about strong gamma rays in that area. And so the first door did not open, which a person enters through in order to get to the second door that opens, automatically. And apparently the second door opened up, and that kind of startled her because she wasn't quite ready for any kind of apparition experience. She didn't see anyone necessarily come in, but she said that the first door never opened, and so it was really unusual. And then she heard a lot of tapping on the window and knocking until she left her shift. And I can't recall if it's a 24-hour situation here or what, but I can tell you that she said it was a little bit bothersome at times because when she was there essentially by herself in that store, all she kept hearing was that knocking on the window and knocking on the wall, and then getting a little bit freaked out by that door opening. All right, so then that progressed into other things that had actually happened to my husband and myself. We were experiencing cell phone issues. My computer wanted to completely erase itself one morning where a message came up for me that I had never, ever seen in my entire life. And I thought, is this a practical joke? And, I got to it in time to say no before it decided to go into full erasure. So they've been having a lot of electrical issues in that area, electromagnetic issues, which seem to affect a lot of electronics. Another thing that happened to us while we were in the area is that my backpack, which is 25 pounds, catapulted, not fell, jumped off of a bench by itself, but it jumped backwards. And when I mean backwards, I'm talking like if something were to fall forward, as in fall down, you know, the lip of it and the opening would be toward, you know, the one of the ends. Well, this was actually in the reverse. It was it was almost like it did a backflip and then landed on the floor. That startled both my husband and myself, and then it just kind of woke me up to wondering if this was any kind of a ley line situation, if I had brought something back with me into that hotel room, or what was exactly going on. Finally, I had an opportunity to speak with some children who live in the basin of that entire area. And I'm not just talking Skinwalker Ranch here area. I'm talking like a 50 to 100 mile or even more radius around that area. And so what did I discover from them? I have discovered that these kids are, some of them do not like what is happening to them, especially if they're a little bit on the sensitive side. There are things that are going on that make them feel confused. One moment, there's something laying in their driveway. The next moment, it's gone. Then it comes back and it's in a different position. There's things with all kinds of sounds regarding like Indian drums being drummed on, a lot of chaos they can hear some nights. And keep in mind, this is a pitch dark area at night. It's not like they have lights out in some of these residential type areas, okay? They've got, again, tapping on their windows. That was a very common theme that I heard a lot of. I've heard things from shapeshifters to doppelgangers to things being removed and then put back. Things that would absolutely confuse any person, not just a child. From what I understand, though, these kids are becoming a little bit more sensitized to this activity that happens in that area, but they don't necessarily like it. And they don't necessarily look for it. In fact, they find it to be quite annoying and in some cases nerve-wracking. And so there was a, this is what I find to be interesting. Kids sometimes are fearless. They like activity. They like adventure and all of that, but not in this particular case. There's just a lot of them that wanted to stop, but this type of activity doesn't stop. And if you go back and you start listening again to Kent talk, and especially and Terry talk, you will come to understand what continues to happen on that land, even as of recent, that hasn't gone away even to this day. And so, of course, what do you do about it? I don't think there's anything a person can do about it. A lot of this stuff is invisible. There's radiation issues that have been discovered on the ranch. People have talked about veins of gold and uranium and all types of metals that have been found not only on the Skinwalker Ranch, but outside of Skinwalker Ranch. There are times when there's a lot of treasure that's been buried, or what people would say is treasure, but a lot of things that have been buried there by the Indians and by those that have come before them, which you can't get your hands on unless you want to risk being killed by these Indians who will proclaim you as a trespasser, even for just the basic knowledge that you might know. I don't know. It's fascinating. And so, think about the kids. Think about what people go through there. Think about the tolerance level that a lot of them do have. It's a beautiful area. And there's a lot to be learned from that area. And I'm excited to see what's going to happen on season 4 of this Secret of Skinwalker Ranch and what they're going to show. But there apparently is a lot of things that they do not show. And there's a lot of stuff that happens that, of course, I will talk about in upcoming shows, whether it be on the Haunted Report or something that might be of interest to you. I am hoping to have another guest on the show who is actually right on the other side of Skinwalker Ranch. And if I am able to get any of the Skinwalker guys' personalities on the show, of course, you'll be the first to know about it. All right, that's a wrap. We're going to take off tonight, and I thank you so much for listening to the show. And, of course, continue listening because I have a lot of good, really good, as I have in the past, interesting guests that will help bring light to a lot of different topics, and I hope you find interesting. Thank you, and good night.